välkomna till ett nytt avsnitt av MSDN Radio för vecka 20 och 21. Mitt namn är Dag König och idag ska vi ha ett litet speciellt avsnitt, ett litet enahanda avsnitt. Inte enahanda på det sättet att det är enfaldigt eller långtråkigt eller något sånt, utan att vi ska koncentrera oss på ett ämne. Och det ämnet är Code Contracts. En ny funktion i Visual Studio 2010 och .NET 4. En funktion som jag har funnit väldigt, väldigt spännande. Och för att lära mig mer om Code Contracts så tog jag tillfället att samla ihop teamet bakom Code Contracts som sitter i Redmond och via Skype göra en intervju. Och det är den intervjun som jag vill spela upp för er här. Men innan dess så vill jag göra lite reklam för ett event som jag har den 21 maj, fredagen den 21 maj klockan 12. Det är ett live meeting event där jag kommer att demonstrera Code Contracts och många av de funktionerna som finns att tillgå. Som jag tycker är väldigt spännande och väldigt bra i vår programutveckling. Men nu går vi över till Code Contracts och vi kommer att träffa Mike Barnett och hans team som alltså har varit med och utvecklat den här funktionen.
Thank you. It's great to talk to everyone in Sweden.
Yeah, and you have some guys around you in your office in Redmond. Could you introduce yourself and them?
I would love to. So first, I'm Mike Barnett. I'm a developer in Microsoft Research who's been working on the Code Contracts projects since the beginning. And we can talk more about the history of that in a minute. But first, I'd like to introduce I'll let everybody else introduce themselves.
Hi, my name is Brian Grunkemeyer. I'm a developer on the Common Language Runtime team, and actually the CoreFX technical lead right now. Been working on Code Contracts with Mike for quite a while, and I'll pass.
Hello, everybody. I'm Francesco Logozzo. I'm a researcher at Microsoft Research, and I'm working also on, guess what, Code Contracts, in particular on the static checker.
And hello, my name is Rustin Leno, and I'm a researcher at Microsoft Research, and I've worked on a project that before Code Contracts called SpecSharp, och det händer ibland att jag pratar lite svenska.
Wow! Well, then we can talk in the real language. If they are a bit harsh on you, we can speak in Swedish and take the real stuff then.
Då får vi göra det.
Good. Thank you very much, guys, to have the possibility to talk with you. Could anyone of you start talking about the history about Code Contracts and where it come from and what's the elevator pitch for Code Contracts?
Okay. Well, there's a long history of program verification work, which is probably way longer and more detailed than we should get into in this conversation. But the immediate history of Code Contracts was an earlier project we did here in Microsoft Research called SpecSharp. And SpecSharp was a separate programming language. It was a superset of C-sharp version 2.0. And it provided the kinds of verification features that are also present in Code Contracts, namely method preconditions and postconditions and object invariants. And the Code Contracts project started based on all the lessons we learned from the SpecSharp project. So we realized how difficult it was to get people to adopt a new programming language, and we wanted to take advantage of the multi-language capabilities of the .NET platform to provide a framework where people could write their program in any language, any .NET language, of course, and yet get the benefits from the tools that we provide that take operate on the contracts in the code.
Do I understand it rightly that this Code Contracts things that to work with more strict contracts in the language is something that other languages have for long, for example, Eiffel?
Yes, Eiffel is certainly the pioneer language that integrated contracts into the source language itself. And we agree that that is a real vital feature of any specification system. Many specification systems have been designed that where the specifications live separate from the code. And then it's always difficult to make sure that the specifications and the code stay in sync. And so we really believe it's important for programmers to have a first-class experience, to have the specifications in the code that they're writing and as they're writing it.
A dumb question, why should I use code contracts? We have worked without this for very many years.
Yes, and the wonderful state of software shows us how well our existing practices have been doing. So, I mean, the elevator pitch for code contracts, so that was the history. So the reason you'd want to use code contracts is that modern programming languages provide a lot of benefits by making you specify the types and the APIs so that when you use an API of some component, you know what the methods are named, you know what the types are of the arguments you need to pass to those methods. But they don't tell you enough about the behavior. And that is the main problem we think programmers face. At least that's the problem we face every day in our own coding, is you're using an API and you're calling a method and you're not sure what it expects from you and you're not sure what it guarantees in return when it returns a value to you. And code contracts are a way to express that, to enrich the signature of the methods so that they tell you not only, for instance, that an argument is a string, but that it better be a non-null string, and maybe it better have a certain length or a certain format, and in the same way that a return value is guaranteed not to be null. And those are all things that you can express with code contracts that are not expressible in current popular languages in their type systems.
Do your other guys have anything to add to this?
Okay, no, they're all either asleep or in agreement or shy.
Okay.
Nothing to add.
One thing, the code contracts, when you're implemented that in, for example, C sharp, you use methods and types. So you use, for example, contract dot require. Why haven't you used attributes instead?
Yeah, that's a very common question we get a lot. There are other systems that have tried to provide specification support in the program source text itself using custom attributes. The problem with doing that is that the definition of custom attributes is restricted so that you would have to write your specifications as strings. You'd have to encode them as strings. And now you run into all the problems of, well, what language are those strings in and how do you parse them? And once you do that, you no longer get any support in the IDE for type checking or completion or all the other things that, you know, are so useful when you're writing code. You know, whereas if we use method calls in the body of the method itself, then you get all those features, you know, just for free because it comes along with the IDE.
One small note on the attributes. Yes, we've gotten that a lot from our internal developers as well. And it may make sense for something like saying that a parameter should not be null. But once you start trying to say anything more interesting, like the relationship between three parameters, you can't really encapsulate that in an attribute, at least not without inventing some crazy additional syntax that we need to go teach people to learn. Instead, doing stuff in source, in the developer's native language, solves all of these problems.
Could any one of you describe the main features of the code contract feature in Visual Studio?
So the main features, as I alluded to earlier, are method contracts, and that a method contract consists of pre and post conditions. So a precondition is expressed using the library method contract.requires, and it specifies to clients of a method what they must satisfy in order to call this method successfully. So for instance, that a parameter is not null is likely to be the most common contract we've seen. Likewise, the method can in turn promise its callers what they can expect upon return from the method, and those are post conditions, and you express those using the library method contract.ensures. So those are sort of API contracts that govern the boundary between a piece of code and its client. internally, it's often the case that when you implement a class, you have internal constraints that you are trying to keep consistent in the code. And an object invariant is the way to express that. And you do that by creating an arbitrary, you can have actually more than one. You can have a method with any name, and you mark it with a special attribute, the contract invariant method attribute. And inside of that method, the only thing you put are calls to the library method contract.invariant. And that expresses the properties over the internal state of the object to tell you when that object is in a good state. For instance, that some field points to an array, and the length of that array is maintained in another, say the number of useful entries in that array is maintained in an integer field in your class as well. That's a typical object invariant.
And above that, you can do this analysis both in the before you run the code in the static analysis, and then you can do this, of course, in the runtime. And I really want to dig a bit more deeper in these two different ways. So, Francesca, was it you that had worked with the static analysis?
Yeah, it's me. I'm the one to blame for it.
Could you
Manuel?
Yeah. Could you please tell me a bit about it? And for one thing, when I read your documentation, you say start with a runtime analysis because the static analysis is rather hard to understand. Why have you written that in the documentation?
Oh, okay. Yeah, because it's true. No. Yeah, the fact is that the static analysis, in order to work, needs a lot of annotation because you have to specify, okay, I have called this method, and this method returns me something which is not null or returns me a string of length 5 or things like this. And now if you wanted to have, you know, the static checker not to have any warning, you have to add a lot of annotation, which can be cumbersome at the beginning. Whereas with a runtime checking, you can just start adding your contracts and, you know, and checking more other things. And then when you are happy, then you can go to the static checker. You can choose. So you can choose which part of the code you want to analyze. For instance, you can focus on some core functionality and then run the static checker on it.
Behind the scenes, I see that you have several executables that are running when we build the system and so on. Could you please explain what is happening behind the scenes when we do this analysis?
Oh, you mean for the static checker or the runtime checker?
Yeah, mainly both of them, but mainly the static. But you can start with the static anyway.
Yeah, so the static checker essentially what it's doing is that our tools integrate in Visual Studio, and they work in a way as a post-build step in Visual Studio. So you compile your solution in C#, VB, or whatever language you want, and then we run the static checker on the compiled code, and we try to analyze it. Essentially, what we are doing is that for every method that you have in your code that you want to analyze, we are starting by assuming, believing to the precondition, and try to prove the postcondition and some other checks which can be specified in the ID. So for instance, you want to check that when you the reference an object O, this O should not be null, or when you access an array, then the index should be in the bounds, and so on.
Could this be done in my own build process also if I have automatic builds?
Yes, you can do also this, no problem.
And one question that comes to mind when we talk about the different feature, we have two editions of the code contracts, one for Visual Studio Ultimate and one for other version of Visual Studio. What's the difference between them?
Okay, Brian.
Yeah. So main difference there is that our static analysis tools are really, really interesting and compelling, but you know they're also not something that we currently are. We want to make them available to a slightly more restricted audience. So we have a release that has the binary rewriter available, and our documentation generator. So you can get started using them and do runtime checking using like any of the versions of Visual Studio that we have out there. For our premium clients,
that's where we are including static analysis for the entire platform, such as FX Cop and contract analyzer as well.
Mm-hmm. Brian, you said something that was very interesting. Could you please explain more of the binary rewriter? What's that? What do you use that for?
So one of the tools in the package is called CC Rewrite. What this does is it takes your binary with the contracts in it and then puts all the contracts in exactly the right location. You may have noticed that when you define a method, we ask you to write your contract.requires, your precondition at the beginning, but also your postcondition at the beginning of the method. So you'll say contract.ensures and then say something about the return value of the method. For convenience, we let you write that in precisely one place, just at the very beginning of the method. We need to make sure that at runtime, we evaluate that post condition at every single exit point in your method. So if you return from five different places, we make sure that each one of those checks that post condition. Additionally, between methods, if you have a base class with a virtual method and a derived class that overrides that method, you want to be able to define a precondition on the base class and then have that inherited by all of your derived classes. So the binary rewriter will go through and recognize the preconditions and apply them everywhere.
But what's the difference? As I think if I see in the user interface, you can have also the a DLL with just the code contracts. And if I understand it correctly, then it will not rewrite the binary where my own code is in. Is it right? Do I understand that correctly?
Try it one more time.
I think you can.
Yes. So if you're... We do have the idea of a contract reference assembly. This is a separate assembly that contains precisely just the contracts for one particular assembly. That's great for any assemblies that you depend on, such as MS Core Lib or System or System Core DLL. Any of those assemblies are currently we're going to ship the contracts in these separate contract reference assemblies. Then the rewriter, when you run it on your assembly, will look at the contract reference assemblies for the rest of the platform and pull contracts in. We do want to look at allowing people to write contract reference assemblies for their own libraries as well. So if you have a library that you are giving out to a bunch of your end users or selling to companies or something along those lines, then yes, you can ship both the actual executable binary and a separate library that helps them at compile time with more information.
Okay, I have misunderstood that feature a bit, I think. But now we are talking about my product, and you talk about binary rewriting my code. How should I work with this in, for example, my debug releases and my real releases to customers? Should I use it only for debug releases and take the no rewriting in the full releases that I supply to my customers? What's the best practices, and how do we do this at Microsoft?
We would recommend that the best practices stem from the first decision you have to make is, what do you want the behavior of your release bits to be? So let's think about just preconditions, for instance. For instance, the BCL takes a very aggressive approach on preconditions. In the BCL, all preconditions are checked, even in the retail bits. Right. Now, that you don't have to choose that. You could decide that for your code, if someone passes in a null argument, something will blow up downstream. That's their fault, right? They passed you a null argument. You don't have to check for that proactively at the entry to the method. So you know, whereas I said, the BCL takes the other approach, which says, you know, at entry to every method, they're going to check the parameters for the preconditions.
And they use code contracts function, not just a throw new argument exception?
Well, because that code was written before the code contracts project existed, they wrote those preconditions in the form of if the precondition fails, throw an exception, which is how many, you know, developers write their code with defensive programming. And so we actually have a way in code contracts that you can mark the end of that section. So usually methods begin with a series of those that check the preconditions. And if you just mark the end of that section of code with a special method contract.endContract block, then our tools will interpret all of those if-then-throw statements that come before that to be preconditions. So that gives legacy code a way to evolutionarily begin using code contracts. So that those if-then-throw checks are always going to be there, right? They're in the code. They're meant to be in the retail product. If you choose to only have, say, your preconditions checked internally on your debug builds, then you can use the method contract.requires, and then you could use the binary rewriter for your debug builds, which will preserve the preconditions. Or for your retail build, you just don't define the special symbol. And because contract.requires is conditionally defined, all of those preconditions will just be gone from your release bits. So really, you have to start by thinking about what your strategy is about parameter validation and error checking in your retail bits.
How about the class validation, object invariants, or contract variants?
Right. So we definitely recommend that object invariants and post conditions are checked on your debug builds, but probably not on your release builds, right? If you are confident that your code is correct, then shipping code that has the post conditions being checked, it should be redundant, right? It should be the case that the post conditions never fail. And you can get that kind of high degree of assurance with the static checker, because the static checker, right, the big difference there is the runtime checking checks the code as it executes. And so it's only as good as the test cases you feed into it. Whereas the static checker considers all possible execution paths. And so it thinks about any possible input to your code. And if the static checker doesn't complain, then you can have a much higher degree of confidence that that your code will never experience an error.
Do you think that there are any performance issues or other issues that I have to consider when I use code contracts?
You know, that's a fascinating question. When we were looking at integrating code contracts into the base class library, we went around and around on that issue for, you know, about a good year in various forms. We had initially looked at, you know, inserting all sorts of interesting method calls, but and many of those ideas were good, or they had good syntax, but they did have a little bit of a performance hit to it. Or they had weird side effects, like they may not have actually hurt us in terms of runtime performance, but they may have increased the download size for the .NET framework. So where we are now is, as Mike was describing, where in the base class library, we have our preconditions described using the if-then-throw statements with a contract.endContract block. That has no performance impact and no size impact whatsoever on our code. This is great. This means that we can adopt them in the library without having any possible, you know, pushback. We have had our perf architects, you know, look at this very, very closely, and they really wanted the answer to be code contracts are free. And that's, I believe, what we've ended up creating here.
But if you in the debug build have very much contracts and so on, could it be some issues that other issues that you should be aware of because the code is different than in the release build?
Well, yes, your debug build will be a little bit slower. However, programmers find that useful. All of the additional checking that you have in your debug builds provides a lot of value in terms of finding bugs. Because you'll find the bug usually within the same method or, you know, within one or two methods of where the bug actually came from, as opposed to finding a crash way up the stack somewhere. So just for a little bit of history here, when we were starting writing the base class library, we put in all of these argument checks on every single method just to essentially help programmers assign blame based on call stack. One of the frustrating things for some of us was we came from C++ world, and there you could pass in an invalid object somewhere, or perhaps a null pointer, but that null pointer is then just passed through like five other library layers. You end up running your program and it blows up in the middle of the C runtime library somewhere. And it actually is your fault, but it takes you 30 seconds to figure out that it's your fault. We wanted to avoid that problem for users by being very upfront about our preconditions. And that's why we check arguments so extensively. Similarly, we think that developers are going to want that level of checking when they're doing their debugging. And yes, it does introduce the possibility of race conditions a little bit in multi-threaded tests. However, for your multi-threaded stuff, everyone knows that, you know, getting threading right is extremely difficult. And you can't really, you actually kind of want a little bit of variety in your timing as well, because there's so much various hardware out there in the world that runs stuff at different speeds. So in some ways, having a little bit of variance in how fast your code runs in debug builds can help you.
So, sorry, I just wanted to also mention that yes, while the performance can certainly change, I mean, if you write very complicated post conditions that are very expensive to evaluate, your runtime will be slower. But it shouldn't change the functional behavior of your code. And we enforce that by requiring that all of the methods you call within a contract are what we call a pure method, namely that it doesn't change the state of the program. Currently, we enforce that by having programmers annotate their methods by indicating which ones are pure or not with a custom attribute. And the tools today just trust those annotations, but we're also working on technology that will automatically check that and enforce so that if you say that a method is pure, it is indeed pure and does not change the state of the program and make your program behave differently if you're doing contract checking or not doing contract checking.
Another question, is code contracts better in some different kind of application? For example, is it better to use for a VPF client application than for a VCF service application?
Oh, I see. Oh, yeah. So one of the things we did to cater to that is that the runtime behavior, we've cleanly separated specifying what the contracts are from what the behavior is of a failing contract at runtime. So there is a default behavior that the tools will inject for you. But if you want a different behavior, we make it very easy for you to supply your own error handling routines that will be used whenever a contract fails. So for instance, on a server, you might want it that any failing contract just writes to a log and initiates some kind of recovery action. Whereas in a client application, you might be happy with the default that throws up an assert box in your face and makes you look at the problem. So that's completely configurable through the tools.
Let me add to that, contracts are in general useful anywhere you do programming, anywhere where there's any doubt at all that your code might be correct or where you might want to describe using a declarative method that says what the method is supposed to do. So that's the same for client code or library code or server code or application code. But having them at the boundaries of interfaces, that is, the boundary between your library and your application, is especially useful because there you can actually read the contract and tell what the method is supposed to do.
By the way, I think the assert window is rather large and very much information. Could you do it a bit nicer?
That's great. Yeah, we can definitely work on that. I mean, it's still, the tools are in a very early stage. It's one of the reasons why it's not in the box. When you download Visual Studio 2010 and install it, the tools are not there. You have to go separately to the DevLab site and get our tools. And the nice thing about that has been that we've been able to put out new versions pretty much once a month, and we've responded to feedback such as this, you know, continually during the past year as we've released it. So yeah, we'll try to make that better.
Good. So in 3 weeks, I have a new version with a nice window then.
We will try. So you should, you know, there's a forum on the DevLab site, and I would suggest that you go there and post a message. So, because, you know, that way it won't get lost and everyone on the team will be able to see it and we'll be able to mark it off as fixed when we get around to it. So, I encourage you and all of the listeners to definitely go to the DevLab site and read the forum and post suggestions and comments on the tools.
One feature and the last feature I think we should discuss today, a feature that when I have shown the code contracts and talk with people here in Sweden, they are rather interested in it, and that's the XML documentation feature that you have. Could you explain that for me?
Sure, I'd love to, but since you mentioned how people there are so interested, I thought they might be interested in a little more background on verification in general, and we have a message from our sponsor at this time.
So this message is, kanske jag ska ta här meddelande på svenska då, att det finns ju många som frågar hur man lär sig mer om såna här saker om verifikation och sådär. Där har vi en ny serie på en videoserie som heter Verification Corner som man kan titta på. Flera videor och det kommer mer. Och där förklarar jag om hur man använder specifikation och verifikation i olika sammanhang när man programmerar. Och code contracts kommer att visas snart där också. Så titta gärna på det.
And what's the link to this video?
The link, let's see, research.microsoft.com/verificationcorner.
Nice. I'm really proud that we have several Swedes on the research team.
Well, we'll do our best. You should send us some more.
I really want to come myself, but
okay, you would be delighted to have you come over.
Okay,
so
Mike.
To get back,
yeah,
pardon.
Yeah, Mike, go talk about the XML documentation.
Yeah, so let me go back to the documentation, and I also want to mention a new feature that will be showing up in the next release. So, you know, as we've sort of mentioned a couple of times now, the really important thing about contracts is for clients to understand what is expected of them in an API. And so, you know, code contracts give programmers now a way to express those conditions much more clearly and succinctly in their code. And now we want to provide a way that those contracts make it into the documentation. There already are tools that automatically generate documentation from your code. So, for instance, Visual Studio, you can just click a checkbox in the project properties, and it will generate an XML file from any of the XML.doc comments that are in your code. So if people haven't used those before a method, if you just type three slashes, then that's a special comment, and Visual Studio will give you a template for writing documentation about the method. And then that documentation is automatically put into an XML file. And then, for instance, there's a tool named Sandcastle, which is available from Microsoft as open source on the CodePlex site. And Sandcastle is a tool that will take those XML files and automatically generate MSDN-style looking documentation help files for you. And so what we've done in Code Contracts is we have one of the tools in the install that you get is called CC Doc. And it will take the contracts from the code, convert them into XML format, and inject them into the XML doc file. So now they're sitting in your XML doc file, and any tool that uses that XML file to generate documentation is able to see them. Now, whether that tool is able to take advantage of it depends on the tool. So, for instance, for Sandcastle, we have supplied in the installation, you can find inside the directory some modified style sheets that we've provided for Sandcastle. And so if you install those style sheets into the Sandcastle tool, then when Sandcastle runs on those XML files, it will create a new section a contract section underneath the in the documentation. So that, you know, really helps make sure that the contracts become useful. Now you don't have to have a human being sit down and try to understand the code to write the documentation. It, the correct usage of your API is automatically there. An exciting feature we'll be shipping in the next release of Code Contracts is takes advantage of the new features in Visual Studio 2010 to provide what we call contract adornments. So these are visual elements that show up as you're typing. So for instance, one of the reference assemblies that Brian talked about earlier for MS CoreLib, a very simple contract is on object.toString. It has a post condition which says that you should never return a non-null string from it. And so now if you, you should never return a null string from it. Yes. It's much more useful if it's a non-null string. So what the adornments do is say you're defining a class and you write an override of toString. A little visual box is going to pop up showing you the contract that you're inheriting from the object base method of toString, so that you're aware of it as you're writing your code. And we think that that will be a real benefit to programmers so that they get the documentation not only when they generate it for their own code, but as they're writing so they can see what the contracts are for the methods that they're developing.
A question there. If I use the if else throw new argument exception in the beginning of the method and I use the contract end contract, will also this part be included in XML documentation?
Yes. So yeah, if you use the what we call legacy preconditions, the if then throw form, that will show up in the documentation telling you what the condition is. And if it's violated, what exception you'll get.
Nice. Really nice. Guys, you should go back to work and I should go back to Friday evening fun. But the last question I want to ask you, how about the future for Code Contracts? What should we expect in the future? For example, when do you think that your next release will be released to us in the field? And what do you think about more in the future beyond that?
Well, okay, so that has a lot of answers. So the next release should be in the next within the next 2 weeks. We're close to doing, and that one, as I said, will include the new contract adornments feature for Visual Studio 2010. I'll let Francesco answer the question about the future of some of the technology, and then I'm sure Brian would like to say something about the future of the tools themselves in terms of what will happen in terms of product groups perhaps adopting them.
Yes, so we are still working on aesthetic checker. Yeah, things to be added. One of the limitations now, the aesthetic checker, for instance, is that it does not allow you to specify does not allow you to check properties on, for instance, array elements or iterators. And we are fixing it internally. We have a prototype which is working pretty well. So I'm not sure it will be available in the next release, but maybe in the next release will be there. So this, you know, to make people more happy, so they can check more things with the aesthetic checker, and also want to improve on performances. And also we have ideas for improving the inference so that there are some, you know, some boring contracts that you don't have to write because the tool can figure out by itself. And well, we have a lot of work to do and a lot of bugs to fix. Actually, I have to go back to fix one of them. And say there's a forum, so please use the tool, use the static checker and report the bugs, and we'll try to fix as soon as possible and to add a new feature that you like. Thanks.
Yes, so we are also going to be using the Code Contracts, you know, static checker and also runtime checking to improve the quality of the .NET framework, which you all use. In fact, our researchers found one problem, one bug in essentially six different places just this week, I believe. So this is a good example of something that we can use to improve our own product code. We also want to start using preconditions and postconditions in various other parts of the product as well. In Dev 10, we We did start using them, but they're in a relatively small part of the .NET framework. We're looking at trying to add them in other parts, such as MEF, the Managed Extensibility Framework, and other parts of the base class library over time. There is some work that still needs to be done on code contracts. We're not quite finished with them yet. So we realize that we have some issues with some contracts that we just can't quite represent well right now. There's two in there that really kind of bug me that I think that we will go after in the next version. First, we can't quite easily represent any preconditions around whether an object has been disposed yet. We need some sort of way of representing, you know, or being able to say, if I'm not, or if I am disposed, then I throw this particular exception. Another thing we want to do is look into threading. There are a number of post conditions that are only safely evaluated when you hold locks. So that's an area of future research. Let me turn it over to Rustin to talk about more.
All right. So in here at Microsoft Research, in our research and software engineering group, we have a large number of projects that concern, well, correctness of code in various ways. And we're trying to push the envelope in both specification technology and verification technology. And there's a lot to be done. And so some of those tools are also available from the CodePlex site in the current state of things, but they're not really for the mainstream developers. But we're actively looking at pushing the research and trying to understand more of how to check programs and get them to be correct.
Nice, guys. I almost forgot. I have a listener question. What's the difference between a search, debug a search, and code contracts?
Okay. Well, debug a cert, you know, right. The difference is really that if you use contract.assert, then you can take you get the benefit of all the tooling. For instance, you can decide to either preserve the assertion independently of what the build flavor is, depending on how you use the tools. You know, that being said, that it's very similar. We just wanted to make a uniform story for all that you could use all the different specifications from the same class as opposed to mixing and matching.
Just to add to that, debug.assert, you know, versus contract assert, it has two aspects to it. One, you get more control over the failure behavior with contract.assert in a more obvious way than using some of the trace listener classes. On the contract class, there is a contract failed event that you can hook. So you can get a callback anytime any contract fails. And then you can choose to, you know, log that or display that to the user or not in any way that you choose. Additionally, debug.assert requires that you type in some sort of human-readable string to pop up when the assertion fails. With contract.assert, we preserve that ability, but if you use a binary rewriter, we will show you the exact source string in your code that failed, so you know exactly what happened. You don't need to worry about getting confused over exactly which file and which line number you're on or anything like that. We'll show you precisely what failed.
Okay, thank you, guys. Mike, do you have something here in the last minute to add to this great interview, this great discussion?
No, I just really want to thank you and all of the listeners in Sweden. I think it's really nice that you give us the chance to talk to you, and we, you know, love to hear from people. Please check out our group's website at research.microsoft.com/rise, RISE. From there, you'll get links to all the different research we're doing and tools that you can try out. And of course, the DevLab site is a great place to go to, you know, for the code contracts project in particular.
Thank you, guys. And I really want to thank you for this feature that you have added and worked on for so long. I think this would be a rather great new thing that we can use to increase the quality of our products. So thank you very much, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you all.